Okay, good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright, Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday the 3rd of June 2024, and welcome to those in the public gallery. It is 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that the council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with the council's policy, I will ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson, Councillor Street, and from our staff we have the Chief Executive Officer, Mr Dave Stewart, Chief Information Officer, Mr Fred Moult, Director of People and Finance, Mr David Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr David Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Deleese Shakuti, Business Improvement Officer, Mrs Stephanie Bellini, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Sam Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening are from our Mayor, Councillor Paula Reet. Just a little note about the microphones. I just wanted to inform you of an ongoing issue with the microphones, so please don't take it personally if the microphones turn off while you are speaking. If that happens, please just press the talk button, and please rest assured that the issue is being investigated. Confirmation of minutes. That the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 10 held on the 3rd of June 2024 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council Meeting. There were no workshops that were held. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have an interest to declare in item 15.1, Jack Jumpers High Performance Training Centre. I'm a financial member of the Jack Jumpers. I've got season tickets. And upon the advice of the CEO, I'm declaring an interest, but I'm going to stay in the room to vote. And I'll also add that I'm a board member of Gymnastics Tasmania, which has a member club at the Kingborough Sports Centre, but again, on the advice of the CEO, I'll remain in the room. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other declarations of interest? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm also a financial member of the Jack Jumpers, so I'll declare that, but on the advice of the CEO, I'll be staying in the room.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else? No. Okay. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? Nope. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. If you can please just state your name and your suburb, please.
Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield. This is about graffiti. 11 weeks ago, I raised the topic of graffiti around Kingborough. And since then, Councillor Casper Dean and Philip Haynes have also spoken on the topic here. 5 years ago, the Kingborough Chronicle covered the same issue with the current Mayor Dean Winter making statements similar to what we're hearing presently from Mayor Reid and council officers. Including Council's limited responsibility for removing graffiti. Does the limitation of Council only removing graffiti from Council property come from Council's own policy?
CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor. So, yes, it does. So we have, I guess, policies that approach the graffiti of council-owned assets. In terms of graffiti on non-council-owned land, that is the remit of that property owner.
Thank you. Even when property is vandalised by graffiti, it's not normally just the one property owner who is... Even when property is vandalised with graffiti, it's not normally just that one property owner who is responsible for removal that suffers. It is everyone in the community that wants to enjoy the area's amenity. It's also other property owners. When we leave up graffiti, it demonstrates to other vandals that their graffiti may be long-lasting, encouraging them to further vandalise other properties. With this reasoning in mind, I ask, in the last 5 years, or even 11 weeks, what progress has Council made towards policy, strategy, or planning changes that address the long-standing graffiti that affects Kingborough ratepayers but is not covered by the current graffiti removal policy?
CEO.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So, Council has been working in partnership with the police to come up with a multifaceted approach to address graffiti within the municipal area.
Does that include changes to Council's policies or to the planning scheme or any strategies?
CEO, sorry.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So at this stage, it doesn't incorporate those types of interventions. It's not to say that it couldn't in the future. However, the first steps are sort of understanding what the approaches that we can take with the other agencies that we work with, whether they be police or other organisations that engage with the community, in order to firstly, encourage an approach that means that the perpetrators of this type of graffiti have other productive endeavour to spend their time on. Then from there, it's working with, other stakeholders that are impacted, whether that be private landholders, especially around substantial graffiti items, to make sure that they are being addressed.
Thank you. If a local incorporated association was willing to volunteer their labour for the removal of graffiti, what council resources and grants are available to assist the association to effectively remove graffiti?
Mr. Stewart. Or Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. We certainly have some community grants that are made available during the year, which would be available for groups like that to actually apply for. And it certainly would be something which we would see as a really positive thing from the community to be involved. Graffiti is quite a vexed issue, as you alluded to there. There's lots of different stakeholders actually involved with it. And I guess we certainly try and do our part in terms of dealing with the various different stakeholders, and as the CEO mentioned there, we have a close relationship with the police in particular. We've also been reviewing our own internal guidelines in terms of what we will be doing and providing, I guess, some more information back to the public in terms of what council can and can't do and what are some of the other options available to people. There is no easy solution to it. I wish I could actually turn around and say, yes, there is, and we could put lots of money into it and it'll fix all the problem there, but it's not as easy as that, unfortunately. But we certainly try and work very closely with all the other stakeholders, whether it's trying to encourage private people to remove graffiti or whether it's actually talking with service authorities to make sure that they also remove graffiti in a quick fashion as well at the same time. So, yes, in answer to your question, certainly community grants would be the avenue I'd actually be pointing people down.
Great. Thank you very much. All for your time.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Charles Biggins, Leslie Vale. Some follow-up questions regarding council's
If you could just pop your microphone back on, please. Thank you.
And just some quick follow-up questions to last meeting. Regarding Council's tree removal application and approvals process, given that emergency tree removal applications can take several days to a week to process, does Council hold sufficient public liability insurance to cover for damage that may arise from a hazardous tree on private land between the time that Council is notified of the hazard and the time that Council issues a permit to the landholder that they have Council permission to remove the hazard?
Mr. Spinks? No? Mr. Smee?
Through you, Acting Mayor, Council holds public liability insurance. The question of whether it's sufficient is specific to the actual event at the time, but generally speaking, Council has insurance to cover off on claims made against it.
Further questions?
In such a scenario, would Council accept liability?
Through you, Acting Mayor, it would be Council's standard practice not to accept liability and leave that up to our insurers.
Does a landholder retain the liability for any subsequent damages caused by the tree on their own property, even if they have concerns regarding the tree's safety, applied to Council to remove it and Council declined the application?
Through you, Acting Mayor, the question is a hypothetical one and could only be answered by being tested in court.
Further questions, Mr. Biggins?
If Council refuses a reasonable request to remove a tree on qualified safety concerns and the tree subsequently fails, is Council in breach of their own Local Government Act by failing to provide for the health and welfare of the community?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the question is not one that has a straightforward answer. You know, it needs to be tested in terms of answering that question. And again, it's a hypothetical question that would be very much dependent on the circumstances and all of the details associated with those circumstances.
Are there any further questions?
Oh yeah, there's plenty more. An Act of Parliament cannot be in conflict with another Act of Parliament. Where potential conflicts arise, one Act is made subordinate to the other. Through the use of exemptions and amendments, Council administers the provisions of two Acts of Parliament, the Land Use and Planning Approvals Act and the Local Government Act. Council uses the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme that sits under LUPA and to assess tree removal applications. The planning scheme has provisions for the protection of significant trees and priority vegetation. Section 5 of Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme contains exemptions that make the planning scheme provisions subordinate to the Forest Practices Act and regulations, the Fire Service Act, the Boundary Fences Act, the Water Management Act, and the Local Government Act. If a tree removal is exempt from the planning scheme, doesn't it mean that LUPA is subordinate to the other state act in regards to that particular planning scheme provisions, and Council has no authority to prevent its removal?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Biggins. That's a complex question that has a number of acts, as you rightly mentioned, involved within it. I think we'll take that one on notice to come back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. When Council officers assessing a hazardous tree removal under the planning scheme with their LUPA hat on, are these council officers instructed to notify the CEO, who also wears another hat and has responsibilities under the Local Government Act to ensure the health and well-being of the community and to abate a public nuisance, including a hazard that council is satisfied exists?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Staff act under operational delegations within the organisation. They do, however, have a responsibility to escalate issues that are of a health and safety risk through to my office. So they will do so when they deem that there is a health and safety risk involved in the work that they're undertaking.
Thank you. At last council meeting, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services said in the reply to my question, is council claiming to be gatekeepers of all the acts of Parliament that deal with vegetation, management on private land, and I quote, we apply our bylaw and our offset policy in accordance with the legislation in which we are able to have those bylaws and policies in place, and they work in conjunction with other legislation such as the Land Use and Planning Approvals Act and the Native Vegetation Act as well. What bylaw is the director referring to, and under what act is this does this bylaw sit?
Ms. Shakuti. Through you, Acting Mayor, that was a reference to general bylaws that we are authorised to enact under the Local Government Act.
We were talking specifically about vegetation removal. Given the council ceased having tree bylaw provisions under Kingborough's environmental bylaw in August 2021 and passed the draft trees on private bylaw in July 2022, that finally went out to public consultation in October 2023, what are the statutory time limitations on council to pass, sign, seal this proposed bylaw, including the yet-to-be-completed legal and parliamentary approvals process?
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We'll take that one on notice if we can, Mr. Biggins.
Has council been made aware of any legal obstacles that would prevent council proceeding with the draft bylaw in the substantive format that it was presented to the public for comment in October 2023?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, council has received legal advice that in relation to the development of the bylaw and in accordance with the requirements of making that bylaw, there is a legal practitioner prepared to sign off on that bylaw.
Any further questions, Mr. Biggins?
If so, is council working on an alternative draft version of the bylaw to circumvent these legal challenges before presenting it back to council for final approval? And will the public be informed of any legal reasons for a redraft if the bylaw is substantively different from the original?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, council does not intend to redraft the bylaw. There may be some minor changes resulting from the feedback obtained through the consultation process, but it certainly won't be a redraft, and council is confident in the legal advice it has received in relation to the validity of the bylaw.
Thank you. Regarding my question on notice from last council meeting in relation to the inclusion of two proprietary risk assessment licensing requirements on council's tree removal application form, being the QTRA and the VALID methods, your officer has replied and claims that council took advice from the Tasmanian Arboriculture Organisation, otherwise known as the TAO. For your benefit, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Arboriculture Australia Proprietary Limited. a not-for-profit organisation, who are the exclusive agents for a third proprietary tree risk assessment tool called TRAQ, T-R-A-Q, that ironically is not listed on Council's application form. I've written to the TAO and made Council's CEO aware that a commercial conflict of interest may exist if a TAO member who is a known contractor to Kingborough Council and only one of four arborists in southern Tasmania who have maintained the expensive licensing arrangements to use one of the proprietary tree risk assessment tools required by Council's tree removal application process, has personally given this advice to Council, and Council has acted upon it without undertaking their own regulatory impact assessment? Can Council please share publicly the written advice given to them that demonstrates that the advice received by Council was officially endorsed by the Tasmanian Arboriculture Organisation itself, or their parent company, Arboriculture Australia Proprietary Limited, and not just the recommendations of an individual consultant?
Sorry, Mr. Biggins, is there a question?
Yeah, this is the question. Can Council please share publicly the written advice given to them that demonstrates that the advice received by Council was officially endorsed and not just the recommendations of an individual consultant seeking a commercial advantage over other qualified arborists?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Biggins. Through you, Acting Mayor, we'll take that one on notice if we can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions on notice from the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had two questions on notice from the public, one regarding boundary fencing from Mr. Charlie Biggins and an officer's response from Nikki Denesta. The second question was regarding risk matrix from Mr. Charlie Biggins and an officer's response from Renee Reichart. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? We've got Councillor Cordover and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question is about platypus in Kingborough. Does Kingborough Council have a platypus management plan to help protect platypus in the municipality? Specifically, how are we managing platypus protection in Whitewater Creek relating to the Summerlees Road underpass?
Ms. Chakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we don't specifically have a platypus management plan, but we do, when works are completed, we do have environmental management plans that address all the potential risks and hazards to the surrounding environment, and if a platypus was identified as an environmental value for that area, we would have controls in place. And in terms of, I suppose, just general management across the municipality, flora and fauna are values that we actively monitor and identify and then have management controls in place for as well.
Councillor Cordover.
Thank you. Through your Acting Mayor, just to follow up to that, does Council consider that it might be worth undertaking work on a specific strategy or consider it worthwhile to adopt guidelines and follow some of the learnings from other municipalities and academia, including the Australian Platypus Conservancy, because I note that they have a wide-ranging number of documents which would be useful for local councils, like managing platypus risk, paths and lights, and a whole series of ones that directly affect local government.
Ms. Chakuti, through you, Acting Mayor, it's certainly something that is worth discussion with the NAB team, and I will take that away and have that conversation.
Thank you. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I really appreciate that. And through you, Acting Mayor, my second question is about little penguins. I'm interested in conserving, protecting and encouraging the little penguins in our municipality. And in light of the Little Penguin and Derwent Estuary program, in light of the Derwent Estuary program in Kingborough's annual survey and the workshop that we read about in February, does Council provide special funding set aside within the natural areas and biodiversity budget for little penguin conservation? Or is it left up to local land care groups and the Derwent Estuary Program to fund programs like revegetation, artificial nesting homes, etc.?
Mr. Kuti, through you, Acting Mayor, I don't believe we have a specific line item for funding the little penguins. But we do work very closely with the DEP and the land care groups.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, specifically around the current level of funding for the prevention of dog attack, which I understand to be one of the major ever-present threats, I guess I'm trying to get a sense of whether or not the amount of resourcing that Council is currently allocating to the mitigation of dog attack on our little penguin colonies, is that sufficient, or is it the recommendation of Council that more money or more resources should be allocated towards that specific goal?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. We have a lot of different values in our municipality and threats to our wildlife. So we allocate our budget in accordance with, I suppose, those different priorities as we assess them. I will correct myself. The little penguin does have a budget, but it's combined into our overall NAB wildlife stream. And we also have dedicated officers, we have officers that do dedicated work around the little penguins as well. So it is resourced at the moment. That is always obviously under review each year as we know more about the values in our municipality.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question about graffiti. Sorry to bring it up. People from the community have asked, does Council have authority when graffiti is not being dealt with for a period of time on a commercial or residential property to caution or warn that owner to say, please hurry up out of community concern and deal with the graffiti? Words to that effect. Do we have that authority or that ability to advise or request?
Mr. Spain.
Through you, Acting Mayor, shorter answer is no. The only potential head of power that we could use would be under the nuisance provisions of the Local Government Act, and I'm not aware of any precedent where that's been used. We could take some legal advice on that, but that would be the only avenue that we could go down in terms of compelling a private landowner to remove graffiti.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions? Questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from councillors. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions were received either. Turning now to page 4, officers' reports to council, Jack Jumpers High Performance Training Centre. Before I seek a mover and a seconder for this one, the situation has changed a little bit, so I'm going to ask Mr. Smee and our CEO to give us a rundown of the situation, and then I'll find out from you if you want to move to discuss or if we're happy to adopt a slightly different recommendation. Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. At the time that this report was written, it was our understanding from correspondence with the Department of State Growth that it was a lease that they were seeking over the land. Subsequent to the report going out, they have contacted us and indicated that their preference is actually to own the land, and that relates to advice they've received in relation to the funding source, which is capital funding, which means that they need to own the land and the asset in order to allocate that funding to this particular project, which is understandable. It's not dissimilar to how we operate here in council, so that reasoning is certainly valid. In terms of this report, the only substantive change in the recommendation would be to change the word lease to dispose, and bearing in mind that this report simply is to commence the process of public advertising as required under the Act to advertise our intent in relation to this land. The other consideration is a financial one. I've indicated in the report that if the land is leased, there is still a grey area with respect to depreciation of the asset. If the land is owned by the state government, there is complete clarity. There is absolutely no requirement on council to depreciate the asset. So it's a lot cleaner in that regard. The only other financial consideration is one of the value of the land that would be transferred, given that the state government are looking for council to provide this land at nil consideration. Whatever the value of that land is at the time of transfer then does affect our underlying position for the year. However, as we have previously discussed, it would be the intention that there'd be a reversionary clause in relation to any transfer of the land that, were it no longer to be used for the purpose of a high performance training centre by the Jack Jumpers, the land would revert back to council. So that's in essence where we're at, and bearing in mind that there will be further reports to council in relation to this matter, this is simply to seek approval to commence that public advertising process.
So would you guys, would anybody like to move to discuss, or are you happy to amend the motion and we just carry on with contributions? Councillor Midgley.
I'll move to discuss.
Okay, do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Cordover. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Okay, we're in discussion. Councillor Midgley.
Sure, I can start off. So I'm just wondering why we didn't defer this report and have all the new information with what's been put forward to us now to the next agenda.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is a time imperative with respect to ensuring that this project moves along. Certainly one of the reasons why Kingborough have ended up with this facility is because of a timing issue in relation to its previous location. So we've given some undertakings to expedite the process as much as we can at a council end. And given, as I said previously, it does relate to moving to that public advertising, it's not considered to be a matter that warrants deferral because the conversations around a final decision with respect to the method of disposal can come once we've received any public representations on the matter.
Thank you.
Councillor Mitchell.
Can I just understand, I tried to take down points and listen as you were speaking, but just in regards to that, the difference between the leased and then, so basically we wouldn't be selling the land as such, so no money exchange would take place, is that correct?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, the intent is we would transfer the land, we would transfer ownership of the land. It would require a subdivision to occur, because the land as it stands is part of the Kingborough Sports Precinct title. There would need to be a subdivision process that happens concurrently with the development application process. But in terms of the ownership, once that subdivision has gone through, we would transfer that title at no cost to the state government, which is in effect a similar outcome to as if we were leasing the land at a peppercorn rental.
Thank you. And if you could just repeat again that impact on our financials in regards to that.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So the two financial impacts relate to the issue of depreciation, and under a model in which the state government own the land, there is no question as to whether they also own the asset, and all depreciation costs are on them. And clearly all other costs associated with the asset are on the state government, so insurance, maintenance, all operating costs. So in terms of ownership, it makes that very clear. The other financial implication relates to the value of the land, which we currently own, which we then transfer to the state government. In effect, the land has a value of, let's say, $250,000. That $250,000 at the end of the financial year is then a loss, a book entry loss to us.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
And have we got any examples of other councils that have done this, if you know of any? And then I guess that situation of, say, if, you know, basketball changes and everyone wants to play pickleball or whatever, you know, as they are, say, that reverting back the land then back to council. Have we got any understanding of experience of that or examples, or is that just sort of a process?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. We've had this conversation with the Department of State Growth around what the state's position would be if things were to change. We do know that, unfortunately, we do have scenarios where professional sports franchises don't stand the test of time. So in that sort of scenario, they have discussed with us that the land would revert back to council ownership sooner if we wanted to take it back at that time.
Thank you. And just one further question. Are there any other foreseeable expenses to council?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the only foreseeable cost to council relates to the relocation of the radio-controlled car club, which councillors would be aware we've given an undertaking to work with them in relation to their relocation. At this point in time, we've not had a meeting with them to work out what that looks like, but it is conceivable that it will cost council some money to make that happen.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is around the status of rates on the property, regardless of the method, regardless of the model. So I'm assuming the Jack Jumpers will be paying rates at the appropriate commercial value?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that is a correct assumption.
And would the rates be the same, regardless whether they lease or own?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, the rates are on the rateable area of land. That doesn't change
right.
Under a lease or transfer.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A couple of questions. Firstly is, what specifically is this timing imperative? And to elaborate on that, is it just some powerful players who want this to move quickly? Because obviously in the previous place that they talked about putting this high-performance facility, there was a delay of several years. So what specifically is the timing imperative that says we don't even have time for an independent evaluation before we say yes to potentially showing our intention to dispose of land, council land?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the timing imperative relates to, in part, the undertaking that council has given that we will do everything we can to expedite the process. It relates to the expectations of players and the coach with respect to delivery of this high-performance training centre. Everyone would be aware they currently train at the sports centre, and whilst they have had success, the arrangement at the sports centre is clearly inferior to what they would get in a high-performance training centre. And we know that the impact on the Jack Jumpers' ability to recruit overseas players, to recruit players full stop, is very much linked to having a high-performance training centre. So, as I've said previously, you know, council understands those impositions, and we've given an undertaking to both the Jack Jumpers and the Department of State Growth that we will do everything we can to ensure that at council's end there are no hold-ups to this project.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you for that answer. Would it be, if we were to defer this item now until we defer it at least for this meeting so that perhaps we could have a special meeting or a workshop on it, or perhaps we could seek some the independent valuation. So before we go to community, we actually have a value of the land that we're intending to dispose, or even seeking independent legal advice. If we were, for example, to defer this item rather than making a decision on the fly, would that be a deal breaker? And is there a risk that they'd move to Breaker Day Council rather than Kingborough or wherever?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I wouldn't say it won't be a deal breaker. However, I'm just not sure that having an independent valuation of the land particularly changes anything. My guess is that the land itself is zoned recreation. There are a limited number of uses that it can be used for. Its actual market value is going to be very low. We're not talking about a $1 million block here. We're talking about land that's part of the Kingborough Sports Precinct that can only be used for recreational purposes, and has a low market value, because if you put it on the open market, there's very little you can do with it.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Are the administrative costs for going through the subdivision process, are they any different from the administrative costs that we would have had writing up a lease contract? Like, is going down this path, because State Growth wants us to go down this path, is that more expensive for council in terms of time and resources to do all that process?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, they're less. There's less cost to council for going through a subdivision process, because State Growth will be required to put in a subdivision application that then is paid for as a standard subdivision application fee. That process is done on the basis of council's fee structure, preparation of a lease agreement would require legal input, the contract of sale requires legal input, so yeah, potentially cheaper under a transfer arrangement.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, I'm nearly done with the questions. It was said that if the intended use, which is the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre, if that intended use were to change sometime in ages and ages hence, that there would be a clause in this contract that says it would revert back to council ownership. Do we have any legal advice on how solid that clause is? I just want to test that theory of under what circumstances could that clause not be effective?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, not having drafted the clause yet, we haven't had legal advice on a clause we haven't drafted. What I would say is that reversionary clauses are not uncommon. We've experienced them in the reverse with council. There was a block of land that councils may recall that we had proposed to sell, and then we looked more closely at it. It actually had a reversionary clause on title that said if council ever uses this land for anything other than the purpose given, it's to revert back to the state government. So they are not unusual. Reversionary clauses have been proven to work in the past in terms of providing that level of protection, and I don't see any reason why they pose any particular risk in relation to not being legally watertight.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I'll just make one small point and then I'll pass the microphone on. To me, I think by doing this tonight, by changing this proposition, in my mind for the last 2 weeks or however long we've had, you know, this agenda and the conversation at the workshop, we were talking about the proposal to provide a lease for this land, and now we're talking about a totally different proposition, and I hear all the points that are being made, but by trying to make a decision on this tonight, it denies the councillors of the opportunity to ask questions of experts, to prepare questions for council staff, to prepare questions in one's own mind about what actually are the differences, the tangible differences between disposing of this land potentially permanently, hopefully not permanently, as we've just heard. I feel like there is a risk here. I don't think it's good governance practice to change your proposal so drastically on the fly, because remember, what we're asking is for the community to consider. We're going to have a further report to council about any objections received in relation to the leasing of that land. We don't even know the value of that land. And sure, maybe the value of the land is very small, but I don't know what it is. So I just don't think it's great practice to do it on the fly, so to speak. I'm certainly happy to seek an independent valuation of the land and conditions relating to the disposal of the land, those two elements. But I feel like the critical clause here for me is that if in the future it changes its intended use, that we get the land back, I would want to be very certain that that were the case. And I have some comfort in hearing the expert advice we've just been provided, but I do find a risk with the very proposal of suggesting that we are now going to be carving up the precinct and disposing it to other authorities. Now, I realise it's still recreational zone and it's still within the Kingborough Sports Precinct, but the proposition of disposing land is different from leasing land, and I think the community will feel that it's quite different. So there are all kinds of reputational risks that are probably concomitant with that. I'd be interested to hear feedback.
Mr. Smee.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Changing the terminology to dispose rather than lease leaves it open. It doesn't commit council to transferring the land. It doesn't commit council to selling the land. It doesn't commit council to leasing the land. Dispose is the terminology used in the Act, and it's a broad terminology that covers all of those scenarios. So in going to the community to advertise our intent to dispose, we are not locking in any particular method. That will come in the further report.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. That's really helpful clarity, that basically this term dispose is a catch-all to include both potentially leasing and also the sale of the land. My final thought, therefore, would be that the case is yet to be made to me that this imperative, the timing imperative, we heard that the timing imperative was about... obviously, I don't want to be the one to stand in the way of the Jack Jumpers getting brilliant players. I think, you know, I'm a season ticket holder. I have every reason to want the Jack Jumpers to get great players. But can they wait two more weeks? You know, they've been waiting a long time, and I don't want to unnecessarily hold them up, but I do want to do good due diligence, and I do want to have good governance practices. So I'm yet to be convinced that waiting... I'd be happy to have a special meeting next week, just to give us a bit of time to really consider what this means. But having said that, I do take some... Well, I take a lot of comfort from that idea that this term disposal is a catch-all that could include a lease. I'd want to know what the ramifications are if we push back on state growth and say, no, we insist on a lease. Well, what does that do to the deal? You know, under what circumstances would we make that pushback? There's a lot of questions here that I don't feel particularly comfortable making a decision on the fly without actually ruminating on this and talking to some experts about it and thinking about what questions I should be asking the experts in the room. So I'm still on the fence on this one. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Well, I think the good news, as far as Councillor Cordova is concerned, is that there's going to be plenty of... As my understanding, there's going to be plenty of opportunity for us to ask all of those questions, because there's not actually any decision being made this evening apart from an advertisement of our intent.
Mm-hmm.
We could decide at the next council meeting that we're not doing any of this, and the decision tonight would only mean that we'd advertised our intent to dispose of land, and with the definition that the Act gives and that Mr. Smee's just explained, that's the full gamut of potential possibilities. I mean, and the thing about the decision that we're making as well in time, regardless of whether we sell or lease, or whether we transfer or lease, we are parting with occupation of this land for a significant period of time. And it barely matters to me whether in those circumstances it's a reversionary transfer or whether it's a lease, because the effect is the same. We're parting with occupation for many decades, hopefully. Hopefully. I say because hopefully the Jack Jumpers is a successful franchise for a long, long time. I have to say, if we are talking about transfer versus lease, I'm actually more comfortable with a transfer of the land, because I found the depreciation advice on the asset being on leased land to be a bit too equivocal for my liking. And the idea that we're going to have some certainty around where that asset is being depreciated and not on our books being the optimal outcome, I think I'm actually more comfortable with a transfer, with a reversion, a potential reversion, than I would be with a lease anyway. But none of that matters, because it's not actually a decision that we're making tonight. So that being the case, if there's nobody else with their light on, I'd be happy to move the amended motion.
Not happy to second it.
Sorry, is that a question?
No, that was me saying if there was nobody else with their light on wanting to discuss, then I'd be happy to move the amended motion.
Oh, right, okay.
And I'd be happy to second the amended motion.
Okay, great. So we have a mover in Councillor Street and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Street?
Look, in addition to the matters that I've just raised in discussion, just say that it's a magnificent opportunity for Kingborough and for the Kingborough community, and I look forward to exploring the opportunity further as matters progress.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I'm very pleased with the discussion we've had so far because it has clarified things in my mind, and I'm pleased that we will have further opportunities to discuss this, and we'll be getting a report which will provide details of objections that we might receive, independent evaluation of the land and the conditions relating to what we do. So I think it's a good situation to be in. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just to add to my contribution, I want to point out 4.2 of the report that there'll be a level of community use of the two courts to be constructed as part of the facility when they're not being used by the Jack Jumpers for training purposes. I think there is enormous potential for synergies with the high school and with the other sporting organisations that are already in our wonderful sports precinct. I think that element alone makes this a really exciting and attractive opportunity, not just for our wonderful Jack Jumpers, but also for all of those young athletes particularly, but also people of all ages who are already enjoying the Kingborough Sports Precinct and those students at the high school who will receive direct benefit out of this, particularly in terms of hopefully being able to have access to some of those facilities when they're not in use. And the other point I wanted to raise was about item 6.1. There are two mature eucalyptus trees at the front of the proposed site for the facility that will be retained and unaffected by the development. So if that remains to be the case, well, obviously, as Councillor Street mentioned, you know, we're not there yet. This is just a report to, you know, note our intention and send it to the community for their feedback. But I just want to put those two elements on the table and say that there are some potential opportunities here that we can capitalise on. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. And there is potential that our next workshop we can discuss this topic. Either we can share it with the other topic that was proposed or shift the other one. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I agree with the sentiments shared. And on the weekend, I saw family members in Melbourne and let them know this item was on the agenda. And they said, oh, wow, Kingborough is really up and coming. They were, yeah, they grew up here and they moved interstate for uni and things like that. So that was a great comment to hear as well. A question regarding the car... the car track place, sorry, I forget the exact name, just in regards to, do we need to know any more information about that? Would it be too indulgent to talk to the state government and say that will come at a cost to council to relocate them, if they had any funds to contribute, and any conversations that you've had further in regards to that?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we have written to the Hobart Radio Control Car Club in relation to council's position. We are yet to have a response from them. We have, however, invited them to come and meet with us, and I think until we've met with them and understood their position, what their needs might be, it's really too early to say what council might be committing to. Certainly in relation to the state government's position, they have made it clear that the Radio Control Car Club is a matter that council will need to deal with. There's not an intention by the state government to assist council in that matter.
Further contributions? No. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? So there's a recommendation on page 6 and we're taking on this amendment here. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. We're on page 7, the complaints management policy. There's a recommendation on page 8, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, happy to move this important policy. It's an important policy for council, for the community and for councillors as well, to all know their rights and roles and accountability to complaints and how they're handled. Just had a couple of questions. 6.1.2, we've got the TTY, which is the Speak and Read Access Hub. It's just a little thing to note. If I was reading that as a member of the public, I'd have to Google what that is. So if we can just kind of add what that is, that would be great. And just notice as well, we don't have the TIS, the Translating and Interpreting Service. Do we need to at all add that if we have someone as English as not their first language? Just wonder if we need to add that.
That's a good question. I can investigate that and add that to the policy. See if it's incorporated in one of the other services through the National Relay Service.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley. I probably have never become this detailed on the policy document, but paragraph 4 and 6.3.1, it says GM needs to change that to CEO. Other than that, all CEOs were there. 6.10.4 just makes a note that that councillors do become familiar with this policy and the complaint process. And I can't remember that during my induction to council if this policy was actually made as an important policy to know as a councillor, and I haven't finished all of my modules yet, so I don't know if it's actually, if anyone else has, let me know. But I'm not sure if other councillors were totally aware of this, you know, once you get on council you need to read this policy. So if I missed something or any insight into that one.
Mr. Mox.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Look, I'm not too sure what particular process you're going through, but there's reference to the policy through the induction handbook that was circulated, and I pointed to all the policies that would be relevant to councillors on our website. In talking with the previous general manager, I'm not sure that all councillors availed themselves of a specific induction program upon being provided with a handbook, so I'm not sure that everyone's attended a formal induction other than the one that's also been offered by the local government office. Yep.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, and just the point there, it says when engaging with contractors about at what point I get, so yeah, when engaging contractors they're made familiar with this policy, so all contractors who engage by council there's a process for informing them of this policy.
Mr. Malt.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, my understanding is that the contractor induction process would make available all the relevant policies that they should be aware of.
Further contributions. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to thank the author and the authoriser and the staff for this report. And just before I get into my contribution, I'll just point out two small things to fix. One is on the cover page, the strategic plan reference has just dropped off. So I'm looking at page 21. It needs to say strategic plan reference 2.4, the organisation has a corporate culture that delivers quality customer service, encourages innovation and has high standards of accountability. So that bit just dropped off, and also in the annexures, to change that terminology from general manager to CEO.
Thank you.
I want to point out that complaint rates have remained consistent in number and type at below 20 per quarter, excluding waste collection, compared to the total number of customer interactions at around 10,000 per quarter, again excluding waste collection. So my first question on that was, why do we, I think I know the answer, but I'm keen to find out. Why do we extract waste collection complaints from the other ones?
Mr. Malt.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Purely because of the sheer number of collections that we have annually, the complaints that we receive, and they relate to missed bin collections, and we don't discriminate through those complaints whether or not the bin's actually been missed or it was late being put out. So we just take those as a missed bin service collection and they're dealt with as a separate exercise through the contractor.
Great, thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I think that the policy is fit for purpose, and I note that it does say that there are only minor changes proposed. I think broadly, the policy isn't just a set of guidelines, but it embodies our dedication to making Kingborough a wonderful place to live and placing the community at the heart of everything we do. And I think that this policy sets forward in a comprehensive way, encourages residents to voice their concerns about our services, actions, decisions and policies. And it is embracing those complaints and learning from them and acting on them. It's embracing complaints as a mechanism for continuous organisational improvement. That's the crucial element of a mature organisation and an accountable organisation. So when I read this, that's what I kind of got out of it, was that we're fostering a positive culture around complaints. There's one way of looking at complaints, which is like something bad has happened and that's a problem, but actually it's flipping that on its head. It's saying that this is an opportunity for growth within the organisation and for delivering excellent customer service. And so when I pulled out from this report and also from the policy, having a positive complaint culture, a constructive environment where we encourage people to give that valuable feedback, that's crucial. Accessibility, making sure that everybody can understand it regardless of their circumstances and that it's easy to lodge a complaint, that there's no wrong door. Transparency and fairness, so that one person's complaint is dealt with in exactly the same procedurally fair way as somebody else's. And accountability and continuous improvement. I think that this policy has those things, and I just wanted to really emphasise that having a complaints policy isn't just a reactive measure. It's not just about reacting to things that might have occasionally gone wrong. It's about having a proactive strategy to engage with the community better. And I think this policy does reflect that. It reflects our dedication to excellent customer service. So finally, I'll just say that every complaint is actually an opportunity. It might be difficult at the time, but it's an opportunity for organisational growth and improvement. And I think this does that. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Yes, mine is more of a point for, through you, Acting Mayor, maybe for the CEO and the Business Improvement Officer to consider. Rather than us having a complaints management policy, could we look at a feedback management policy where we are a bit more all-encompassing in the information we retrieve rather than a punitive or negative focus on complaints, which are totally understandable. We should always be hearing complaints and dealing with them. But I think we could be missing feedback. How can we do things better? Compliments as well. And I'm wondering if we could look at something that's a little bit more holistic rather than down that one road without losing the stringent process you do need dealing with complaints. And I'm just wondering if council has thought about that. Maybe you're five steps ahead of me. You know, that's just sort of my feedback back to you as a consumer as well as a director.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor, given that question was addressed to me. So absolutely is the answer to it. So a complaints management process is really important in terms of being able to structurally, step by step, work through a process to deal with disgruntled constituents. I guess what you're saying is, how do we take a broader view into how we take feedback from our communities, how we involve communities in this organisation and make sure that we're responding to their wants and needs. So that is something that we will be looking at. The continuous improvement policy that's next for you to have a look at this evening is a part of that story. Beyond that as well, we need to be constantly challenging ourselves to how we listen to our community with the good stories and the bad that come out of them, thinking about what that feedback is and incorporating that into how we do things in this organisation to make sure that we are delivering a customer and community-centric approach to this organisation and our operations.
Any further contributions? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Well, just thanks to the report authors and the councillors that spoke, and I like that feedback, complaints, compliments and complaints sort of idea that Councillor Antoli raised, and thank you, Mr. Stewart, for the insight into that as well.
Okay, there's a recommendation on page 8. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? The motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 33, continuous improvement policy. There is a recommendation on page 37. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm pleased to be able to move this. I firstly want to start by thanking the staff that have been involved in creating this continuous improvement policy. And I think that their efforts, whilst we may be at the, I guess, the start of this kind of journey, they're invaluable in helping us chart a course to a more efficient and effective council. This policy will give us a framework and it will guide our administrative processes, service delivery and accountability systems. I think that, well, it in the framework will help keep our costs lean. They already are very lean, as we keep hearing, but it will also help to reduce waste. Again, we don't have too much of that, but there's always more work to be done. It will simplify work processes and improve, hopefully, improve both employee and customer satisfaction. My key point in my contribution tonight will be to say that I think we need to understand that our objectives will only be achievable if we provide the necessary funding in order to achieve them. So in the finance section of the report, section 5, which is on page 35, we can see that there will be financial implications for implementing aspects of this policy. That is the critical point that I want everybody to sit with tonight, is that this need for financing underscores the importance of adequately funding our plans. Proper funding is a prerequisite. Proper funding is a prerequisite for success. Without it, our aspirations for continuous improvement will remain aspirational only. Just like with climate action targets that I spend a lot of time talking about, if we don't adequately resource our targets, then we shouldn't be surprised if they don't come to fruition. So it's critical here that when we talk about root cause analysis and business needs analysis, as I'm pleased to see that this plan has, they will help us identify the fundamental issues beneath some of the problems. So I want us all to realise that if the root cause analysis says, well, one of the reasons why it's taking too long to do some kind of planning thing is because we don't have enough planning staff, as an example, then we need to, as directors of an organisation, we need to take heed to that. So it's not enough to just put this policy on a shelf. We know now, because of Section 5, that there will be financial implications here, and we need to take those seriously. It won't be easy, necessarily, but at least now we have a framework. So I think investing in those processes will require resourcing, but to me, it's not a cost, it's an investment in the future. With that, I endorse this policy. I thank the author and the authoriser and the team behind it, and I reiterate that Council will need to adequately allocate proper funding to implement all of our goals within this. And we shouldn't view that expenditure as a cost, but rather an essential investment in our ability to deliver on our strategic objectives. I think this will be a useful tool for driving positive change, and I hope that it will unlock our full potential by adequately funding business improvement initiatives to drive efficiency, innovation and accountability to meet the ever-evolving needs of our residents. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So I'm very happy to see this policy come to Council. I guess no matter how good your organisation is, there's always opportunities to do things better, and it's really important not to get stuck in the mode of doing things one way, because that's the way it's always been done. I think it's great that we've got the Business Improvement Officer to commence in the new role in March, a role that's going to be crucial in implementing the improvement initiatives that are being identified, because I guess it's one thing to identify the opportunities, but can be frustrating if you haven't got time to implement the changes, so that role is very crucial. On the whole, I think it's a great policy, and it's just the responsibilities that I'd like to focus on, which is on page 43 and 5.41 and 5.42. So this is where it talks about the responsibilities for the Chief Executive Officer and the responsibilities for management. And in my mind, I think we've got these two, the first two dot points around the wrong way. So under the Chief Executive Officer, we've got promoting and supporting continuous improvement initiatives that contribute to enhanced business outcomes and improved customer service outcomes. And then under management, the first dot point is providing leadership that encourages initiative and a progressive culture within the organisation and a commitment to continuous improvement. And in my mind, I think the direction for this continuous improvement policy should come from the very top, which is the Chief Executive Officer. So I'd actually like to propose an amendment, if I can, please.
Sure. Does the mover and the seconder... the seconder was... Well, does Councillor Cordover and Councillor Midgley... Do you agree to this amendment? Yep. Okay. So great.
I think Mrs. Morton's got the amendment, so...
Okay, so this becomes the new motion. Councillor Bain, would you like to continue?
Yes, thank you. So basically, I just think the message should come from the Chief Executive Officer. I think it's important for all staff to know that they've got the support of the person right at the top, and then that'll filter down through the organisation, through the managers, and everyone will get on board. And it's a really important policy, so hopefully everyone does get on board.
Great, thank you. For my own contribution, I just wanted to say that, this was an initiative that was put forward by the Kingborough Ratepayers Association, and it's great to see that we've been responsive to them in this way. I know the Mayor was very keen to see this policy come into fruition, and if she were here, she would have spoken at length about its benefits. For me, anything which identifies efficiencies and effectiveness can only put us in a better position, and I love that there is a detailed process as part of this policy and that it measures and evaluates the results of improvements. So I'm happy to lend my support to this one. Further contributions, I've got Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, agree with all the sentiments raised about the importance of this policy. Just sort of had to put my hat on when I worked at council, and how, as a reading this policy, and it is quite lengthy, and I thought there's lots of words kind of that say the same thing. But anyway, that was just a bit of a comment regarding that. And like, I hope I'm not getting too much into the operations, but I guess in approving such a policy, I want to ensure that it's meaningful, that it can be achievable, and there can be some like accountability to it, really. Noting in the policy it said it's promoted as part of a staff induction to all staff, but then that's fair enough, but how then do they have an ongoing connection with that? Like, is there personal KPIs put in place for desired outcomes? Like, how do we ensure, yes, it's being read, but then how is it kind of meaningful?
Mrs. Vellini.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor. Thanks for the question. Basically, in relation to how it will bring about meaningful change and meaningful uptake by council staff, is that the continuous improvement will be linked to our service levels and the complaints data and customer feedback, positive, negative, whatever it may be. And so that will obviously aim is to provide optimal service delivery to our community. We'll also have functional working groups, so linking all the business functions within this organisation, and so therefore staff will be linked to this process at all times for any suggested improvements also, feedback and collaboration with affected stakeholders will take place at all points throughout the improvement projects. And so the functional working groups will keep this alive and working within this organisation. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to reflect on Councillor Midgley's comment that I also found the policy a bit wordy, possibly a bit repeating itself. Where you've got in 5.2, where you explore discovery, planning, implementation, which obviously comes from your workflow graph. I just felt that they were probably unnecessarily wordy and repetitive. Maybe that's something as an improvement you might want to consider looking at, just to take that feedback on board, a bit of a test to see if the policy is working. But it's something, it's definitely the role. This was a role that I and a number of councillors put at the top of the list during last year's budget discussions in terms of deliberating on who to actually, or what to fund. And I'd like to thank Mrs. Bellini for taking up the position. I didn't realise until just the other day that you're actually in the role since around February. So welcome from that point of view. I personally would like to see, I really do respect what Councillor Bain brought up in terms of changing those dot points. I really think that, in my humble opinion, the improvement, the business improvement officer should have a strong dotted line report to the CEO, and I think that needs to be maintained so that he or she is not relegated to the side as a necessary evil rather than being a strategic part of the CEO's tools to lift council's game. And we do need to lift our game, and we definitely do a lot of good, but we do need to lift our game and break bureaucracy where it is. And I do want to support that change, because culture comes from the top. It's not just process improvement, it's not just systems improvement, it's culture improvement, because personnel is policy. And I think it's important for the business improvement officer to have an open door relationship with the CEO to identify where there are blockages and not to be fettered or filtered by anybody in between that relationship, is my humble opinion. I'll just pass that on to the CEO to think about, and I thank Councillor Bain for bringing up this important change.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a follow-up question, and it's along the lines of what Councillor Antoli raised before, but have Council ever investigated the ability to implement a real-time survey customer feedback through our service delivery channels? And I'm thinking examples might seem bigger organisations like banks and Link, where they capture the feedback as someone's leaving the store or at the end of a call or a quick survey online, those types of things.
Mr. Malt.
Thank you for the question. Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, we currently have an existing online survey through our phone service. So people are invited to undertake a survey at the end of the transaction. And we are also actively investigating now over-the-counter transaction satisfaction surveys through devices available at the Civic Centre and other areas. And also looking at pointing that back to a common evaluation survey on our website via any other channel as well. So where we might complete a service request, for example, when we close the loop, that'll be with a follow-up email saying, you recently did business with us, how do we do? And it points them off to a website. But I am acutely conscious that people in the community are getting bombarded by after-service surveys now, and we have to be careful that they're not lost in that process and people don't participate. So we have to be a bit careful how we implement them.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you. I'd just like to run a quick survey to see how we did on this. No, I think it's a really important policy, and it's a really important structural improvement to the organisation, and it shows our dedication and commitment once again to excellence in service delivery, and actually that we're listening to the community. So that the genesis of this whole thing was that the community came to us and said, where's your continuous improvement policy? Where's your ideas around continuous improvement? Well, here it is, and this is... there's a lot of words and ideas, but it's because we are putting together a framework which we will then allow us to not so much be as reactive as we always were, but proactively improving our organisation at every turn. That's how you make a future-proof organisation. That's how you have a sustainable organisation. That's also how you improve the health and well-being of the most important people within an organisation, which is it's our people, it's our team, it's our staff, it's the people that live and breathe this organisation, and then they transfer that culture throughout the rest of the community. You know, we're one of the major employers, we're one of the major economic drivers, we're one of the major places where people day to day, their material existence is affected by council. So we need this organisation to exude positivity and generosity and care for its community. Now, that's something that I think we already live and breathe. But this is a policy that recognises that there's always more work to be done. And so I'm very proud of this organisation for having the humility to take that on. And I wish all the success to the team. And I really think that the good things could come from this. Thank you.
Thank you. So there's a recommendation on page 37. It was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turning now to page 46, the Kingborough Draft Multicultural Action Plan. There's a recommendation on page 47. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Dean, seconded Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Look, the purpose of this report is to seek our endorsement around the table for our first, what would be our first ever multicultural action plan. It is a draft, so the process going forward here is to put it out to public consultation and make any final amendments. Look, I am really happy to move this one, and it's been a really, really enjoyable experience to be a part of over the last several months. The staff, I know the Mayor as well, and those community members who put their hand up involved in that multicultural advisory group have done a really, really amazing job. And I know the Mayor would have loved to have actually spoken to this herself. She's been very passionate about this, but I'm sure that when the final tick of approval is given by us, that she'll be able to speak to it then. So as I've said before, us tonight is a draft multicultural action plan. It's been based on results from a community survey as well as contributions from the 10-member advisory group. That group included myself, it included the Mayor and Councillor Antoli, as well as members of our multicultural community. As 4.1 of the report points out, the draft action plan identified four key themes where Council feels that action could be taken or we could try and improve what we do, whether it's being, you know, a facilitator of things or potentially being a partner with other organisations. Those themes essentially are about fostering a more inclusive community here in Kingborough by celebrating our diverse cultures, improving how we communicate with residents, and ultimately about improving outcomes for those that live in Kingborough regardless of where they come from. And to achieve these four themes, the action plan names up 36 actions in total, which are a fantastic read, and I'm obviously not going to go into all of them now because they're before us. But I will just say I think they reflect really well the survey results that came through. And, you know, the discussions that we had as a group were really great and added to what the community had to say. And I suppose as someone, you know, I've lived in, you know, three other countries and tried to navigate life as a migrant, and trying to find, you know, navigate what I would say is bureaucratic systems, trying to go to the doctor, trying to experience new languages. This is what we've heard we could do and be better at. So I wholeheartedly support what is being put in front of us, and I really hope that in a few weeks' time or in a few months when we can finally sign off on this, that the community will see some really positive action from us as a council in this space. So I move the report.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I would like to just add a thank you especially to Council Officer Julie Alderfox for her tireless work. She was able to draft a survey that the members of the action group, the multicultural action group, were quite heavily changed and updated, which was the whole purpose of her drafting, a bit of a framework. And the actual survey was pretty much written by them. And we just took copious notes. It was quite fantastic. And there was great insight that they offered, and I really appreciated their feedback. Having come from a cultural and linguistically diverse family myself, I was not able to speak English until the age of six, and I was became a naturalised citizen in 1974 at the age of five. I really understood where they came from. There were certain stories and feedback that I recall actually having flashbacks hearing my own family talk about all those years ago in the 70s. So it was really great for them to feed in, and I do want to take my hat off to the Mayor because she really threw herself into this one. This obviously was a bit of a passion project for her, and I want to reiterate what Councillor Dean said about her. I'm sure she'll want to sort of fire the starting gun once we get this all approved.
Mm-hmm.
I personally love the themes of celebrate, communicate, inclusive and education and improving outcomes. And improving outcomes was the number one reason for doing this. Because we are a massively fast-growing area, especially it would be us and Glenorchy, which would be the two fastest-growing areas in the Greater Hobart region for culturally and linguistically diverse people. So there's a lot to learn, and I appreciate Director Environment Development Community, Deleuze Chidkuti, with her contacts over there in Glenorchy. maximising those contacts to our, exploiting those contacts to our advantage. So I just take my hat off to those two staff officers as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thanks, other councillors, for their input, and also, yeah, big thanks as well to those community members for the valuable time as the chair of the LGBTIQA+. Like, I know that it does take time and commitment to spend to do this to get us to where we are, this draft now, and the councillors involved. And yes, I definitely agree, the mayor has a real passion for this as well, and the staff and all the key stakeholders that are named in that part as well. I know I saw the CEO of Multicultural Tasmania at the citizenship ceremony, and she was really pleased to see that council is doing this as well. And also I'd like to acknowledge Sajini, who put forward that motion to council in the first place, and I thought it would be really great next time it's on the agenda that we let her know that it's here, because I'm sure she would love to hear that, hear council speak about that for that final approval. So, absolutely support it going out to community and stakeholders. On the weekend, I was really grateful to be invited to a conference, Better Together conference in Geelong in Melbourne. And during that conference, it was very much LGBTIQ plus themed, but after talking to a lot of council staff and managers, they often have a inclusion, social and inclusion kind of framework that like sits above all these sort of action plans and strategies that we have. And when I sort of talked about, you know, the reasons of why they have that, and then they have the other number of policies sitting under them, they said it provides like a strength to these strategies. So in future councils, you know, we've approved these now, but then say in future councils, they might be like, oh, let's wipe this, let's not do that. Whereas if we have kind of a framework that sits above it that kind of embeds all that, it actually gives them strength to these kind of action plans. So I'm just wondering, have we, now that we're sort of approving more and more sort of social inclusion themed kind of action plans, have we had a think about maybe a sort of social inclusion framework that sits above that for the future?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes is the answer to that. So in the time that I have been here at council, have been looking at other councils' frameworks and have noted what you have noted. So we intend to be doing that work to have a look at other existing frameworks and how we might develop and propose one that's suitable for Kingbra.
Great, thank you. And just a point under the greater inclusion and education, it says it will develop a cultural awareness training program for staff. Recently I had some staff in my team, in my work, where we attended some cultural awareness training with the Migrant Resource Centre. I don't know if that's sort of a check-in with them to see if perhaps, rather than we develop a new training, that we work collaboratively with the Migrant Resource Centre. That's not really a question, but I can see a light going on.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, we most likely will be using a suitable training provider rather than developing the materials ourselves. And once selected, we would work with them to tailor it if we need to, specifically for the council staff. Thank you.
Thank you. And just another thought when I was reading some of the great like outcomes and aspirations was at our citizenship ceremony, which we know the diversity of people from different cultures, from different countries that attend there, and noting that there was quite a few kind of actions relating to letting people know about different council programs, waste information, emergency services and that kind of thing. I just wondered, at would it be a crazy idea at the citizenship ceremonies to sort of have some stalls at the back that after your ceremony you can actually go and get this kind of information at staff, and we can kind of tick some of that sort of thing off. Anyway, that was just a thought that I had. Otherwise then you're doing another separate event to kind of promote this thing, and we know that not everybody comes along. So anyway, that was just a little kind of insight that I had, but I have no idea if you're allowed to do that kind of thing at citizenship ceremonies.
Ms. Shikudi.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Absolutely great idea. And we have already embarked on, I suppose, something similar. So we now have a Welcome to Kingbra pack, which our new citizens talks about, you know, provides them information with our council programs. We can work to expand that, and we've got a great new initiative as well with Z cards or Z cards, which we have put together, not just for new citizens, but also for our vulnerable members in the community, that have a lot of information about all the different services and support services in our municipality, so we could include those in the pack, but certainly if there are other organisations that may be able to attend our citizenship ceremonies to provide information, as long as it's in the spirit of the day, we can look into that as well.
Great, thank you. Thanks. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd just like to lend my voice in support of this draft Multicultural Action Plan, and I look forward to it being released for community consultation. I'll also echo those sentiments of sincere thanks to Julie Alder Fox and also Sujini Sumar for her commendable work in bringing this to council, and also those 257 responses that were received in the survey to all of those people who participated. It is a very important element, and it's also very... we are enriched by the great diversity that is within the Kingborough community, something like 44 different languages spoken in homes around Kingborough, people born in 50 different countries. I think it was... There's a lot in that survey to unpack, which is really interesting, and sometimes it's very uplifting and other times it's really alarming. So the things that I've found, I thought it was good to see that 63% of people feel part of their local community, but that means 37% of respondents don't yet feel part of their community, or they're unsure, which means that there's clearly plenty of work to do to help people feel safer, more at home and more included in community life. And the points around access to healthcare and jobs, particularly around the lack of access to a GP, were really stark, and I think it's another poignant reminder to the state government that, you know, we need to work collaboratively, but there is real need out there in terms of access to healthcare. Equally, it was saddening and shocking to see the numbers around people who have quite recently experienced racism, discrimination, bias, or felt unsafe in our municipality. We can do better, we must. And I think this draft action plan helps us along that journey. I echo the points raised by Councillor Antoli around these four key themes of celebration, communication, inclusion and education, and improving outcomes. It's a really good way of viewing the remarkable contribution that people from all different walks of life have made to our community. And I think along with that, this investment of $20,000 over two financial years, I think, is a prudent way forward to make sure that the draft action plan's implementation is able to be adequately managed by the terrific community services team in collaboration with other council departments. So we want to ensure that actually, just like with all our policies, that it's not just something on paper, that actually we put some funding towards it and get some really great outcomes to make people feel more at home and safer and more included in this wonderful community. I wholeheartedly endorse the draft Multicultural Action Plan to go out to community, and I look forward to its successful implementation. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
I guess having arrived here as a little girl, 1 year old, living in this community, when I was at primary school, I was singled out as being a little Dutch girl, and we were all asked to do Dutch dancing, and none of us had been taught Dutch dancing. And it was a form of ridicule. And I think we've come a long way since then. And I think it's wonderful, and I'm really impressed by this document. I think we can do more, though, to celebrate the diversity of the councillors around this table, those who speak different languages, those who have come through this community and have risen to the table here, and also council staff. We have many council staff that are of diverse backgrounds and speak different languages. And I think we should also consider having members of our access committee being able to speak different languages, or having cultural diversity, as well as our safety committee and other committees that we encourage to participate in what we're doing here. But I think it's important to recognise that we do have a large group in this community here. I know we have had feedback from many of them, but a lot of them haven't given us feedback, and I find that disappointing. At the same time, when a person comes from another country, the one thing they want to do is integrate and blend and not stand out. Well, that's how I think most people I know feel. Often you can't pick that they've come from another country. But I guess we're getting people now who do stand out because they're of a different colour. They come from different countries. They're not just Anglo-Saxon white from Europe, for example, like I am. And I think it is really important that they feel wanted and that they feel welcome. And one of the best parts of this policy is the sign that is being proposed that people feel welcome when they come to the council. And not just to council, but into Kingborough. As we've got a sign on the highway saying that we are a sister city of Grootegast, which was a council in Holland, which is now...
Pop your light on again. Thank you.
Sorry. We were a sister city with that council from the early 80s. And that those people in the Netherlands still exist and would really sincerely like to continue that relationship with us, which has drifted away over COVID particularly. And I would really like to see that resurrected by council. But thank you very much for all the hard work and thought that's gone into this policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just briefly, I totally agree with all the previous speakers. It's an amazing report. And that stat about over 21% of Kimber residents were born overseas, like one in five, is quite amazing, really. So it's so important we get this right. My biggest takeaways were the fact how well the survey results translated into the actions in the action plan, and then secondly, how many of these actions have got a time frame of like immediately starting July 2024. So I think it's really exciting that we can get some of these things underway like very, very quickly and start making, getting some results, which is fantastic. So hats off to everyone involved in the report, and I'll certainly endorse it.
Thank you. Any other contributions? Just for my own contribution, I feel like everybody's expressed everything that I wanted to say, so I'm not going to repeat myself, but yeah, thanks to everybody who was involved. Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up?
No, I'm going to say really what fantastic contributions we had, and to hear already that we're making progress is really great to hear, and some of these actions are already taking place. I think at the end of the day, Kingborough, at least in my understanding, has a very good reputation as being a family-friendly community and municipality, and I'd like to add to that to being, you know, the most inclusive municipality. And so hopefully this is kind of the beginning of that, and yeah, hopefully in 20, 30 years' time we'll have some really good outcomes and stories from people that have grown up here that can say that, you know, they didn't face those kind of things. So I'm really excited about it. It's been, you know, really, really good discussion, so I'm happy to...
Great, thank you very much. So there's a recommendation on page 47. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. Turning now to page 73, the financial report. There's a recommendation on page 75. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the financial report, May 2024, looks like there's been very little change essentially from the April report. The forecast deficit's changed from 2.379 million to 2.429 million. Looks like it's relating to the rate revenue reduction. Just a couple of questions. The first one is just around the copying dividend. I know in our 24-25 discussions there was talk of that increasing. And at the moment, we're still at $350,000, so I'm just wondering if that's likely to increase come the end of the year, put us in a better finishing position.
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Look, through the budget process, you're right, we did talk about that, and all indications at this stage remain that their financial result for this year is going to be significantly better than expected. We haven't made a forecast adjustment at this point in time because I think I'd just rather wait until their final results come through. But at this point in time, yeah, we're still expecting a favourable result.
Councillor Bain.
Excellent, that's great to hear. And the other, just a small thing I picked up, was on page 83. and where we've got the rates income, I think the forecast budget is actually lower than the year-to-date actuals, so I think it might be just a little misprint. Just FYI.
Mr. Spinks.
Yeah, I can just respond to that. So we did, during the month, have some supplementary rates come through, so what we should have done is just to revise down that unfavourable end-of-year forecast a little bit, so our apologies for not doing that.
Further contributions, or Councillor Bain, sorry.
No, I was going to say that. That's good news to essentially, the bottom line.
Right. Further contributions? No. Would you like to sum up, Councillor Bain? No? All right. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motions carried unanimously. Turning now to page 96, appendices. There's a recommendation on page 96. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved, Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Dean. Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We have for us the appendices, and taken as read, I've just got a couple of questions. One of them, so we've got the Environmental Services Quarterly Report, the Planning Quarterly Report, and then also the CEO Diary. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff, so I'll just take it as read, but, you know, I think programs like Weed of the Month and stuff, they're really good, so I think there's a lot of really good stuff in here, so it's definitely worth a read. Particularly, I was excited about, the orchid mowing, temporary no-mow areas in Kingborough Reserves to protect our native orchids. Little simple changes like that, but really great things come out of them. My question relates to a meeting with the Callis Group, a representative of the Callis Group. So this relates to the Chief Executive's Office's activities, 13 May to 7 June. So this was on the... My question is just about, is there any update that you can provide us around what was the purpose of these meetings, and is there any further detail?
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor, thank you for the question. So the meeting was firstly a meet and greet with them as a significant developer within this municipal area. Secondly, they provided me an update during that conversation of principally the development in Margate that they're doing, which you'll see if you drive down Channel Highway, the amount of work that's going on in that area. So they were providing me with some drawings that they have done to be able to provide a concept of what they're trying to achieve there.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. And just to follow up to that, is it true that any question of any kind of things like rates, reliefs and discounts and things like that, all of those decisions always do have to come before the councillors, don't they? None of those kinds of decisions can be made on delegation, can they?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, correct. And there was no conversation to that effect during the conversation.
Thank you. That's an important clarification. Thank you, Acting Mayor. My other question was around the meeting with traders in purple. Specifically, I'm interested in timeframes for development, but are there any further details that you're able to disclose about that meeting with Traders in Purple?
Mr. Stewart.
Yep, so Traders in Purple are working on obviously the commercial development within the Kingston Park development area, and they are actively putting in tender documents for development at the moment, but there's no response to this point.
Thank you, that's all.
Further questions or contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just echo the sentiments about these reports. They're really great and valuable to read. I think they'd be great as well for the Kingborough Community Forum, so they can get a real update in regards to what Council's doing across all areas. Just noting that one. As Councillor Cordova, I guess he kind of in his question talked about the little penguin colony, and I'm sure it was maybe relating perhaps a bit to this one that's outlined in the report regarding the new penguin colony that's been found in Tinderbox. Councillor Cordova sort of talked about the dogs and little penguin qualities, but also just wanted to raise about cats as well and kind of how we're managing, mitigating any kind of cats being in that area. Last year when I was in Stanley to have a look at the penguins, it was so devastating to see like cats roaming around, and this has prompted me to contact Circulating Head Council to say what are they doing about it. So I guess, what are we kind of doing in this area in regards to cats and these newly found little penguin qualities?
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, as you're probably aware, we do a lot of active cat management. The focus really has been on Bruny Island and Peter-Murrell Reserve at this stage. So I'm not exactly sure what our specific actions are in relation to the new colony, but I imagine it will be taken into account with planning our cat management activities, and it's something that I'll take away and discuss with our NAB team.
Thank you. Just a comment on the water quality testing, noting that we have certain areas. In my local area, there was actually a raw sewer spill down to one of our local bays that are not currently tested. And I note that a sign is still up in regards to that. So it's in Howden in the Stinkpot Bay area. I guess in regards to the ongoing kind of, like, if this isn't a council kind of water quality site, who then, I don't know, tests the quality of the water in there? Tazwater did come along on the day, but, like, and the sign's still up, but I guess, you know, a council informed about that. Does the water quality get tested? Like, who does the follow-up when it's not a sort of council-tested area site as identified in this report?
Ms. Shikuti. Through you, Acting Mayor. I'll have to take that on notice. It's a good question. Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. On page 117, there's discussion about adapting to climate change, and I'm wondering whether there's been any movement on the proposal by the state government to amend the coastal policy, whether we've got any more information about that.
Ms. Shikuti. Through you, Acting Mayor, I'll have to take that on notice.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just at 2.8, talks about the progress of the Kingborough local provision schedule and moving to the Tasmanian planning scheme. Just wondering if there's any further information in regards to what's there. It talks about possibly being expected that the public exhibition of the EOPS will occur in the second half of 2024. Is there anything further to add?
Ms. Shikuti.
Drew, Acting Mayor. We are in the final stages of finalising the local provisions with the Planning Commission. Once that is complete, they will notify us to go to exhibition. We're anticipating that in the next 2 or 3 months to commence. We have a lot of plans in place to facilitate our community to come and engage with our planning team to ask questions so they can make appointments. We will be doing, I suppose, a tour around the municipality and setting up some information stands and sessions where community members can come. Once those submissions are made, they are collated and considered, and then we may make or propose some amendments to the local provisions, which then the TPC will then consider, and then after that it will be finalised. So there's so like I say, the exhibition period we're anticipating within the next 3 months, and then which then goes for 60 days. So it's probably at least a 6 month process before it's finalised.
Any further questions or comments? No. Councillor Cordova, you didn't want to sum up. So there's a recommendation on page 96. It was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Dean. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Notices of motion. There were no notices of motion. Page 96, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Antoli. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 7:19.